Saybrook University places nutrition at the forefront of health through its commitment to developing evidence-based scholar practitioners. With a strong nutrition science curriculum that addresses how body systems function and interact with their environment, applied through a person-centric integrative approach, graduates of the PhD in integrative and functional nutrition are prepared to address the complex array of today's health concerns. Learn more at saybrook.edu. Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 7 of our 50th anniversary season, season 4 of the Saybrook Insights podcast, a proud production of Saybrook University. We're an online, nonprofit, regionally accredited institution of higher learning located in beautiful Pasadena, California. Today, Carmen brought our dedicated alumni council leadership, Drs. Ariel Dance and Jeremiah Piercy, back to discuss a recent online event they led titled From the Mouths of Babes, in which kids provided their reflections of experiences during the pandemic. We listened to clips, after which Dr. Dance and Dr. Piercy reflected on some of the most poignant and funny moments. What came through is this, that our kids' experiences are an important part of our understanding the entirety of the human experience. We remain grateful to these young people and their parents for spending time with us in conversation. To learn more about Saybrook University, visit us online at saybrook.edu. And now, our 7th episode featuring From the Mouths of Babes. Thank you. Welcome, everyone, to Saybrook Insights. It is so good to be here with Dr. Ariel Dance and Dr. Jeremiah Percy and our wonderful co-host, Carmen Bowen. We are bringing them in today to talk about From the Mouths of Babes, a Saybrook production about 2 weeks ago where we brought kids from around the country together to have conversation with Drs. Dance and Piercy about their experiences over the last year, the good, bad, and the ugly and the funny. So we're excited to sit in conversation today with Ariel and Jeremiah. Carmen, take it away.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today to talk about From the Mouth of Babes. I have to tell you, when we talked about this experience, children certainly in movies and things like that, they always steal the show. So I knew when we decided to do this, we did not know what was going to happen. So Drs. Dance and Piercy, what was your, when I asked you to do this wonderful project, what were your thoughts?
Well, I have two kids, so I know how working with kids can be. So it's a little daunting, I think, for me to try to coordinate such an endeavor, but I thought it would be really fun to hear from their perspective how this pandemic is going from their point of view.
Correct. So what about you, Dr. Dance?
I was prepared for anything. I definitely wasn't sure. I know that a lot of young people are dealing with a lot of mental health concerns right now being home. And so I wasn't sure if we were going to get some really heavy stuff or if we were going to get a kids say the darndest things type experience. So I was prepared for anything. And if Carmen asks, I say yes. So that's where I was.
I think we've all been trained to say yes, right? Yeah, right away.
I'm proud that they did say yes, because, you know, we at Saybrook and other places, you know, we've seen so many podcasts, videos, articles from adults. And so, you know, we just haven't seen a lot from the kids. So I thought that was quite important.
Yeah. Ariel, did you see kind of both and what were your initial perceptions from the takeaway from the experience?
I think we noticed that definitely you have some young people who are very outwardly ready to share all of their experiences, be they positive or negative. And then some who are a little bit more introverted and not quite sure how to articulate some of what's happening right now. So we didn't necessarily get the heavy stuff that I anticipated, which I kind of – part of me wished we had. I don't know if we were prepared for it, though, so maybe it's better that we didn't. But we didn't get that side of it, but we did get the balance of some people not knowing necessarily how to say all that's really happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeremiah, any thoughts from you on that?
Yeah, we did get, a little bit of the fear side on the fears of the future, you know, what's next to come. Mm. And that some people aren't taking the pandemic seriously. But I think overall, it was a very light conversation, which I was happy with, actually. It was a good mix, in my opinion. So I was happy with the quality that we got and hearing their perspectives.
That's great. That's good. I think one of the things we're trying to do today, and this is exciting, this is a first for our podcast, so we're going to try and bring in some of the clips and have both of you comment on those and elaborate on some of the stuff that the kids brought up. We thought we'd start off, I think, right with how they feel about the pandemic. You want to dig in now and see what they had to say and make some comments on that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's give it a shot. All right, here we go. We're going to start with that first clip.
And I feel like this can be used as a reminder to, like, cherish those moments when we can, like, talk with our friends or have a good time at, like, a trampoline park and, like, but we still need to bring awareness that, like, things are going on, so we can't just, like, ignore it and act like it's never there. So we have to find that happy medium of being safe but still having fun.
I don't really know. It's like I'm lucky because I'm fairly, like, there have been so many people around the world that have felt not just the emotional impacts of COVID-19, but have felt the very tangible, like, brunt end of it all. The frontline workers, the working class who got laid off of their jobs because businesses had to let go of people. And so it's like, on one hand, I'm very grateful that the worst I have to experience is a few issues with the online school tools that only work 80% of the time. The occasional, like, news story that distresses me. But on the other hand, it's like, I'm scared, you know? I'm scared for people. I'm scared for what's going to happen. Leadership in a lot of countries seems to be failing. There seems to be a lot more focus on appealing to the worser, I guess you could say, aspects of people than actually doing the things that people need in leadership. So it's, I'm worried. But at the same time, I guess there's also a little bit of hope in that because I have faith that the young people of today, including myself, but even younger than me, will see what's happening right now and remember that when they're in positions of power and see the wrong decisions that were made and remember that and be better than who preceded them. So it's a mix of fear and hope, I would say.
I was shocked, just so articulate in how they're interpreting this experience and what's happening right now. It's amazing.
Yes, and we were there, and yet I'm still feeling, wow, that was so deep.
I know adults who cannot say how well they're dealing with what's happening right now. Like, they're just sitting at home like, nah. But there are young people who are just, like, telling us what they're feeling and how they want this to, like, change our lives. And hopefully we learn from this. Like, oh, okay, yes, let's follow this generation and learn from what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. It's powerful. I think, because looking back on my own life, me as a 16-year-old boy was not worried about what was going on in the world. I was still focused on high school and just making it through high school and, you know, trying to survive that whole different kind of jungle. So it was so refreshing to hear their perspectives with such clarity and the insight that I could have never had at that age. And so it's really uplifting, I think, to me to hear them speak in that way.
Right. I knew Leo was going to say something profound. Definitely. He's just such a wonderful young man. And then also the 11-year-old Mr. Wesley, I've known him since he was in kindergarten, and he just never ceases to amaze me. And as he's matured and the things that he had to say, and so did all the other kids, I don't think I was that insightful at 11. I'm pretty sure I wasn't.
I can say for sure I was not. Yeah. I'm with Jeremiah. I was just working to get through school and figuring out what this whole thing was all about. So to have that level of insight was really impressive from those two young men. You know, back to Jeremiah, to your point, do you think it's generational? You know, a lot of conversation has emerged about this younger generation being the one that's going to affect the changes that we're hoping to see, you know, whether it's climate and racial justice to general social justice action to just how they process the world. I don't know. Do you, either you or Ariel, have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think technology has a lot to do with it because it is so much easier to find information. You know, the internet had just come out when I was about 11 years old. So, you know, for me, it was more of a fascination, like this new thing. I had no idea how to use it or what it could be used for. But now just looking at the younger generations, how they can access information and use it and spread it, it's really quite amazing, especially what level they're going to find that knowledge. Because he doesn't have to be, neither of them had to be, you know, searching for these topics or understanding these topics. But for them, it was of interest. And I think that's the important thing. It's of interest to that generation, where I don't think it really was when I was growing up.
Yeah, that's interesting.
No, nor did I even care about politics at that time. And I was, even at 16, I was a freshman in college then, and I didn't know anything about politics even then. And now, but these kids, they have such knowledge. And we had television. My daughter always asks, did you have television when you were growing up? Yes. In color. But I just didn't, I guess, you know, Flintstones were more interesting than politics.
Yeah, it just seems like the EQ is so much higher with these younger people nowadays. I mean, I sound like such an old man, but these young kids these days, they're just so much better. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's a beautiful piece of this. I'm always hesitant to paint a broad brush across any group or generation, but this, they do seem to represent this rising collective of young people who are wanting to make a difference, but also being very empathetic, you know, to the world around them and to the people, both in their lives and outside their lives. I don't know. Ariel, any thoughts on that from you?
I would definitely agree, but I think that speaks more to who is raising them and the impact of, you know, the influences that their guardians have had and what guardians have had to experience and now are passing on to the young people. So it's a good thing. Generational curses are being broken and we are now pouring in some positive experiences. So gives me a little bit of hope, if I can steal that back from what Leo said. So a little bit of hope of what's to come.
That's almost like a great lead-in title to our podcast, Breaking Generational Curses from the Mouths of Babes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I like that.
We're on to something.
Ariel, you're like gold every time we talk, I think. You know?
yes, such great ideas and now phrases. So, Dr. Long, the next fun questions I liked was, what do you like about being home? That was... Take a listen.
What do you like about being home?
I get to play video games.
I'm playing video games.
Oh, yeah, video games.
Yeah, video games. Amir likes video games. Someone else said video games?
Me.
Yeah. He's playing video games too.
Was it Corbin who said video games?
No, it was Quinn.
Quinn?
Go ahead and raise your hand when you want to say something.
Mom, they can hear you.
And I like being home with my family.
You like being home with your family. That's sweet. Anyone who doesn't like being home?
Wesley?
What do you not like about being home?
I'm very active, and like I like to skate, I like to surf, I like to dirt bike ride, like to ride my bike. We have a pretty big backyard, and so we can build a lot of that stuff, and we already have. But it's just a lot more fun to like look for new places to do all those things and like try and find cooler stuff than just what we have in our backyard that's very limited.
Mm.
Okay.
Did you hear that? Very limited. I love it. Oh gosh, that was so cute. But everybody said the magic word, video games.
Video games. Who knew?
The wired feature of the generation, right? That's it.
Oh gosh. Even my little quiet ones, I noticed Onyx, he was trying to be shy, but when the word video game came up, he was like, now I'm gonna jump in, Dad. Video games.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something.
Oh, God. They all seem to come alive with that one word.
Do you think, you know, maybe just to dwell on the pop culture moment on around video games, you know, is this a problem? You know, because you hear often that video games are a major issue. They create all sorts of pathologies psychologically and sociologically. I mean, from our two amazing PhD folks in the room. What do you both think?
So I don't know if I have no expertise in video games, but I do have a family member who was a part of this group, and he is very much involved in video game culture because he can talk to his friends. Whatever video games are now are not what they were for us in the 80s and the 90s. And if I'm aging myself, whatever, but we couldn't wear headsets and hear our friends. They're pretty much just on the phone. It's whatever we were doing back then, but you're just talking to your friends. And so that's, I think, what they're missing. I think that's what video gaming is for them. They're just playing with their friends, but they don't have to move. That's really what it is. So really what they're missing is socialization. Mm-hmm. That's what they're saying. I miss socializing with my friends at a computer or on my, like at a screen. And I think that's what they're saying more so than, and I mean, in another setting doing some cool thing. But I think what they're really saying is I want to yell in a headset with my friends.
Yeah. Well, I actually have a pretty strong video game background. But for me, because I grew up a military brat and we were always moving. So to Ariel's point, it really was for me a way to socialize. And when I left home for the first time when I was 18, it allowed me to connect with my family. I played video games with my dad, with my brothers. I have three brothers and a sister. So it was a way for me to connect. But as a whole, I think it's gotten a bad rap for what it offers, because I think it offers a lot of creativity as well, and a lot of exploration and a lot of problem solving. You know, it's a lot more active than watching the TV. So if I had to say what would be worse, I think sitting a kid in front of a TV would be worse than letting them play a video game, because there's so much interaction, and now there's social interaction as well as the video game interaction itself. So I don't think it's as big a problem as we've been led to believe, and the science on that's kind of mixed, but personally and anecdotally, I think that it actually does far more good than it does harm.
An interesting point. I know my son went to the mat on this point about 4 years ago when he was in sixth grade, taking a teacher to task because she was saying video games are something along the lines of the spawn of the devil, right? And so she was saying that it's the downfall of society. So he brought in all this research. Jeremiah, like you were saying, the research is actually out there that shows good problem solving. Ariel, to the point around socializing opportunities. Yeah, there's some bad influences, but in video gaming, if you choose the wrong games or what have you, but there's also some real upside to it too, just like with anything, I think. And to your point around sitting in front of a TV all day, or, you know, having the opportunity to exercise your mind and engage with your friends isn't necessarily the worst of options that's out there.
Yeah, that's true. I got to tell you, and I'm going to date myself saying this, and I'm okay with that. But when I have a brother, and when video games first came out, that's how old I am. When video games first came out, we got one.
You mean like the ColecoVision or the Atari?
Atari Pong, where you turn the thing, boom, boom, all day, right?
That was the best game ever. I'm just saying this.
But they said it was going to ruin our minds. And like you say, the spawn of the devil. but look how they have grown a lot from the days of Pong. Although I must tell you, my brother and I loved Pong we played for hours, but yeah, now to look at the evolution of video games is quite remarkable. But it does. If we could have had our friends on headsets playing Pong with us, we would have. Uh-huh. So I yes, love it. So, well, anyway, so let's go on to the next thing. There was a question that we asked, and it was called, how do you feel? Let's take a listen.
I'm kind of happy to actually be able to talk with other people other than a computer that when I do talk to it, it doesn't do anything. Mm. So it's kind of better to talk to somebody other than Siri.
Yeah, definitely better than talking to robots all day.
Yeah.
Siri sucks. Okay. Siri sucks.
Thank you.
It shows that her feelings are shy to talk to people.
It's okay. We're all shy from time to time. Mm-hmm. But thank you for joining us. And thank you all for joining us and even talking about your feelings. I'm feeling really happy and supported, I think, recently. Mm-hmm. Happy that, you know, we're getting the vaccines and the pandemic is hopefully coming to an end, or at least the most significant parts of it. But also happy that we get to spend this time and talk to you guys. I appreciate you all for coming, and it makes me happy that we can still come together as a community and just have fun together. And that's really what this is all about, just us having fun and talking about what's going on in our lives.
What about your feelings, Mr. Wesley?
I feel like, so for me, I feel kind of sad about COVID and all the people that have lost their lives or relatives. But I feel like it does for me, because I haven't had any severe interactions with any relatives that have had COVID, or I haven't had any relatives that have had COVID. So I feel like I'm very lucky, and I feel like the people that have gotten it have been very heartbroken for them and their relatives that have passed away or just had it in general, because it's a very powerful virus, and I just feel very bad for the people that have gotten it or their relatives have gotten it.
I feel very scared about what's going on right now. It makes me feel scared about how our country is acting towards this, where there are people out there who don't want to wear a mask and people out there who don't think they should be wearing a mask. And there are also people out there who think that the pandemic is not a real thing. So that really does scare me.
A lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of sadness. And that's what I was saying. Like, there, you feel it. It's like a little cloud kind of looming. And I just feel like we couldn't quite tap into it without, like, you just want to, but you, like, don't want to a little bit. But it's there. You feel that, like, this is definitely a pressure that young people are feeling. And they know it's there. And it's kind of just floating around everyone. They hear everything. They know everything. And we were probably some of the first people to really ask them the tough questions.
Absolutely. But they were quite honest with that question. How do you feel? And they just jump right in. And that was really enlightening to know that they were not afraid to tell you that they were afraid and worried about the pandemic. Okay, so let's go to the next question. This one was quite interesting. Has anyone learned anything about Black History Month? Take a listen.
I mean, this is Black History Month after all. So has anybody been learning about Black History Month during this time? And even with last year with the Civil Rights Movement, did you guys participate in it? Does anybody have a story about it or something like that?
I don't have a story, but I think I did a couple of marches, and I've been doing assignments with homeschool. Like, if I have a little break, if I finish my class a little early, I'll have to do Black History Month assignments.
Okay, so what have you been learning then with the Black History Month assignments?
I've learned that a lot of things are unfair, a lot of things have been bad.
Hmm. Yeah. Unfair? You mean like not equal?
Yeah, not
that equal. People are treated differently, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a good observation. Has anybody else learned anything about Black History Month or through the Civil Rights Movement? Have you guys marched?
I learned a lot about Ruby Bridges and like how she was the first Black girl to... or a person of color to go to an all-white school. And I thought that was kind of cool how
16.
Like she stood up to all the people like protesting and like telling her that she couldn't go there, and her being brave enough to go to school and keep going there and not quitting or doing anything to like dim down the pride of colored people.
Yeah, absolutely. Her story is very powerful. Do you think that stories like that make you feel better?
Yeah, I feel like it really makes me feel good about just like how even if you are treated unfairly or you've been bullied or anything that's like not very nice, how certain people have stood up to that and said, like, this isn't right. We shouldn't be doing this, and, like, done something about it instead of just being a bystander and just, like, watching it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So not being a bystander and doing something about it.
Right? I know for me, a big piece of it was, especially with the extra time that I fortunately have, with the online schooling, I was able to take more time to immerse myself in media, going over different people's experiences, especially like on YouTube. There's a lot of access to different marginalized groups, especially African Americans, discussing their experience with institutional racism, and educators who go into the history of it all. So I became more informed on the specifics of how institutional racism has embedded itself specifically in America over the course of its existence. And it's been very enlightening and has allowed me to have a deeper understanding of the problems that are facing the country. So that's probably been the biggest step forward in my life, at least.
Wow.
Yep. So, from the mouth of babes, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was probably the deepest thing, but that yet they delivered again.
Yeah, I think, again, they impressed me with every question that we ask. To be seeking out understanding about this very complex topic that, quite frankly, has a lot of adults incapable of describing it or even understanding it. Yet we're hearing it from, 11-year-old, 16-year-old, and even younger. I think Quinn was 8. So we're having these very young kids learning about equality and fairness and even empathizing with this experience that they may not ever have. So to see that coming from such young children,
when I had no idea what equality even was at the age is so incredible to me. It really gives me a lot of hope, and I'm excited to see what this generation does with this knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, with this conversation, and you won't see it, hear it right now, but I hope you do get to watch this recording. This conversation evolves into what you're about to see, hand gestures and movement into what equality looks like. And we had them, you know, show us what could this look like with your body. And I think that also kind of speaks to the work that we do here at Saybrook of really like embodying this culture and embracing this work. This isn't just talk. This isn't just about verbalizing and reading and watching videos, but this is also, you know, you want to walk the walk and talk the talk. So, I'm not doing your job at all, Carmen, but I think it's really helpful for us to kind of like lead into that, because that was the next part of this conversation.
Yes. Let's take a listen.
All right, here we go.
Does anybody else have a hand gesture that you can use to show equality or fairness? Corbin and Quinn? Yeah, that's good. We're all interlocked, working together.
Anyone else? I see like you're like linking your thumbs. And then here. Thanks, Leo.
That was cool, Leo. Mm-hmm. Look at Corbin and Quinn. That's cool, too. I like that.
Anyone else? Yesterday, Jeremiah just gave himself, like, a big hug. I like that one. Just, like, embracing people.
Mm-hmm. Love to everyone.
I can't do that. Whatever you're doing with your fingers right now, I cannot do that. You're braiding your fingers together. Just going to call that a unity braid of fingers.
Yeah, so I think we tried to get them to, and I'm glad, in hindsight, I'm glad that I was verbally saying so you can hear it, but we're really just trying to get them to embody what unity could look like. So you hear hugs and embraces and braiding and whatever that looks like to you, and I kind of charge us as adults who are listening to this to figure out how you're embodying unity and how are you embracing that within your being and as you go out into the world. And, you know, you can't hug people right now, but figure out how are you just doing this work and braiding yourself into this world, this rainbow world that we're living in right now.
And they seem to enjoy that when you pose that question, to hug themselves and their gestures. That's when they were very animated and that's kind of chuckling because they really were having fun with that and trying to see who could outdo the other with their little hand gestures.
Yes, for sure.
And I think it also gives them a physical representation of something that is psychological or ineffable in a lot of ways, which is equality. You know, it can mean so many different things to so many people, but essentially giving it a tangible, framework for their mind to really encompass it, I think helps just to show them what it means like. I mean, they're trying to show us, but essentially they are telling themselves what it looks like. So I think that can be really powerful.
So true. So true. So the thing that made us all chuckle the most was when this question was posed: what has been your favorite pandemic outfit? Listen to this.
What has been your favorite pandemic outfit so far? Do you just wear your pajamas all day, or do you have an outfit that you put on just for school and then you take it off right away?
Pajamas. I see a raised hand. You're on mute though.
I kind of like being able to wear more choices of what I want, because most of the time we're always like a lot of the time we're going out, going to get something or stuff like that. Or when we're going to the grocery store, now we just stop and pick them up instead of having to go in, and that also gives me a chance to wear what I want to wear, so I don't have to dress up like all nice just to go into the store.
I agree. I haven't worn my nice clothes, my dressed up clothes in a while. I haven't ironed anything in a really long time, and I like it like that. Anyone wearing a lot of mix match clothes?
Like definitely.
Yeah. I see a lot of raised hands. Definitely. Lauren, what are you wearing that's kind of mixed match?
I'll wear like striped pants and then like a solid shirt. Or I'll wear a half pajama, half regular clothes. And then I'll wear, I don't wear shoes. I don't like wearing shoes, so I won't wear my shoes. And
sometimes why do you need shoes?
Yeah, exactly. Why do you need shoes? God made feet, walk on them.
I love that.
I like that. That sounds like, I would say God made feet, dance on them. Because that's my name. Get it? I love that.
Sometimes I've kind of always been mismatchy, mostly because I'm colorblind. Not like to the point where I see like black and white, but like I can't differentiate certain colors. So I'll like at any time, like even before the pandemic, I'll like go to school and like let's say Lauren would be like, "Why do you have like a blue shirt and a red pants?" And I'm just like, "Oh, I thought these were black pants." Oh, dang it. And be like, why?
Yeah, but Wesley, now you're in style.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
That was so fun.
What were you thinking, Dr. Dance, when they were saying that? What were you thinking?
I'm going to be honest. Part of me almost felt I didn't want to be rude. I was trying to make sure that I wasn't being ableist. I'm going to be honest. I wanted to make sure I wasn't being ableist and being rude about this. But at the same time, I was laughing because Wesley thought it was funny. So I'm like, okay, we're laughing with this. We're going to go with this. And then I was like, this is so me. Like, I'm wearing pajama bottoms and a polka dot sweater right now. So, like, okay, let's go with it. Like, this is me. I'm not the only one who's a little mixed matchy right now.
That's right. What about you, Dr. Piercy?
I loved it. I love that kids even have more permission now to be kids, wear whatever they want. If they want to wear shoes, they can wear shoes. If they don't, they can walk around barefoot. So I think it's really cool that, you know, they get to express themselves in a completely different way than before the pandemic.
Absolutely. And I think they love the fact that they could say, I'm not matching and, you know, it's okay. And everybody else is doing it. So now they all feel like this is the end thing. It's not because we as parents, we will not let them go out mismatched and, you know, different psychedelic colors, but, you know, I don't even care in the morning if I see stripes and polka dots and I'm like, okay, well, at least you're dressed.
Well, what's going to be great is what happens after. Like if this trend continues, if parents are just like, I'm hands off.
So yeah. True. Yeah. I think we're all getting, I know Carmen and I were talking about that a while back, like going into the office right now, it's just getting back into practice of dressing up enough, right? So you wouldn't want to have seen what I was wearing, you know, half the time. It was literally like jogging pants on the bottom and a dress shirt on top, you know. It's so I could relate to these kids across the board. And I just have to say, Lauren's comment was gold. We posted that on our Facebook and Twitter feeds. It just was such a beautiful. It was funny and beautiful. I thought it, at the same time, just how she captured that. And then Ariel, your, you know, God made feet dance on him. That was just a great exclamation to that.
Right. Now she has permission in her mind to not have to wear shoes because we all.
Sorry, we're condoning the behavior.
Yes. We certainly condoned her behavior of not wearing shoes, but that was really good. And I'm glad that question was posed.
Well, I think we have one last little bit that we wanted to, you know, kind of run this out on, which Dr. Piercy, you wanted us to close out this piece on, I think, a statement that one of the kids made or several of the kids made. And this was in response to kind of funny stories, right, around what they were into and, you know, some of the funny things they were doing.
I'm watching as fast as I can. I'll be like, video game time, 45 minutes. And then after school, I'll just be like, video game time.
But our mom.
I think that just kind of captured it all, didn't it?
Video game time. But then when Corbin, at the next statement he made, because he says, video game, we can go do video games. And then Corbin, of course, does what all siblings do to us. Take a listen.
She doesn't let us do any electronics on our lunch break. So he cannot do that.
Mom just got outed, right?
Yeah, you do it after chores, though, right?
Is that Fortnite?
Yeah.
Fortnite. 45 minutes of Fortnite. Got it.
They are so cute.
Fortnite.
And then he looked at him. I can't wait because, you know, this is audio, but we'll also be showing the video so you can actually see them in action. It was hilarious. And when he was telling on him, both Quinn looked at Corbin like, really? You really going to tell it on me, man?
It's a great realization moment. You can see it on his face.
Yeah.
Like, oops, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Right. Well, Dr. Long, the reason that, you know, we have so many great people at Saybrook, but the reason when this idea popped into the brain of mine, I work with Dr. Ariel Dance and Dr. Jeremiah Piercy on so many projects, but they both are writing or have written children's books. And so that's why I thought they would be amazing to do this. So before we close, do you guys want to quickly talk about the books that are coming out for kids? So when they're available on Amazon, people can look for them.
I'm going to hold until my contract is signed. But I have, I will be signing with a publisher this month. On an exciting project on grief, a children's book for grief. So nice. Stand by. But I will say thank you to Carmen and to Dr. Long because my last podcast was with Dr. Long talking about writing my children's books. And I think I put it out in the atmosphere and you helped. So thank you.
Awesome.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
I'll have to have you back to talk about your newest book along with Dr. Piercy. Yeah.
That's right. Dr. Piercy?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of explain it a bit. But yeah, I'm still in trying to figure things out on getting it published. But I really wanted to have a kid's story that focused on Black history because I've seen a lot of books out there and most of them were more about the historical timeline than an actual adventure. And I really wanted to create something that was engaging for children, but also had elements of education involved. So I kind of set out to create a series focused on this, which I have titled How to Save Your Ancestors While Living on a Martian Colony, about a little girl that goes on this grand adventure to save her ancestors, goes back in time. So we'll see how it ends up.
Well, you both are just such gems to our Saybrook community and to the broader community. Thank you so much for taking the lead on meeting with all of these kids, a few weeks ago. It was just such a joy to even just be in their presence and your presence to hear the conversation unfold. I hope we can do something like that again, maybe an annual From the Mouths of Babes follow-up, conversation. Any final thoughts from the two of you on children and their impact and the work that you're doing and engaged in? Just any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think this really showed me just how much kids have to offer and that we do need something like this. We need something that allows them to speak about their experiences because their experiences are important. They're going to be the generation that comes next. And I think that is something that we should nurture and develop and give them a voice. So I really think that was a really important takeaway. Even just watching my own children during that watching them watch these other brilliant little kids is so empowering. And it just, it makes me so happy that that's the generation to come.
Yeah, I mean, it was wonderful just to be a part of this project and experience. I know that we only scratch the surface of what children are hearing and feeling right now. It is my hope that loved ones and parents and guardians who are watching this really listen and also maybe take some time to talk to the young people and their families and ask them what they're going through and feeling right now. You may learn something really beautiful or really scary. So once you digest that, you know, seek whatever is next for your young person. If they tell you that they're going through something right now, really, you know, take them to find the help that they need, if that's what they need. If they tell you they just need to dance a little bit more, take some dance breaks with them during the day. Whatever your young person is seeking right now, just be there for them. They're feeling all sorts of things that we have no idea what they are. So, yeah.
Great advice. Great advice. Great insights.
Thank you so much. That was great advice. So, Dr. Long, I think From the Mouth of Babes was quite a success. And I agree with you guys that we should do it again. So you want to take it away to end this?
Right. Yes. Well, so thank you both to Dr. Ariel Dance and Dr. Jeremiah Piercy, both esteemed Saybrook alumni. And we are proud to have them be within our entire family and leading the way. Stay tuned on the show notes. We'll also post the video there for you to take a peek at. It's well worth the time. And Dr. Piercy put together some really cool in and out takes on that. So take a moment to also watch that video. More to come from Saybrook Insights over the next few weeks. And really appreciate both of you being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on Saybrook Insights.